Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
There's no thoughts of this is wrong or anything like that.
He told me if they ever found out what we were doing, he and I would go to jail for the rest of our lives.
Secrets will eat you up. You feel so alone.
I want to be able to speak the truth as loud as I had to speak the lie.
That's from Leaving Neverland, the new explosive documentary about entertainment icon Michael Jackson. Two men accusing the singer of sexually molesting them when they were children. Well, tonight, we're going to talk about the film and the issues. My guests are Romaine Bain, a former manager for Michael Jackson, and Dr. Evelyn Shukat, child abuse pediatrician and medical director with the Treehouse Child Advocacy Center. Lines are open. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Shukat, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for asking.
And Romaine Bain, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It's Ramon.
It's Ramon. Okay. Thank you. So much. I hope that wasn't a rip at me. So Ramon, talk to me about what you did for Michael Jackson. What was your relationship with him?
Well, I thanks for having me on to
sure.
discuss this. I began as Michael Jackson's publicist late 2001. And then from there, I became his general manager, president, COO of the Michael Jackson Company, music licensing agent, meaning that all of the Michael Jackson-owned music I had to give approval for the usage of. I was trustee of MJ Publishing Trust. Mm-hmm. And then Mr. Jackson appointed me to the board of directors of Sony ATV Music Publishing because he was a 50% owner and he had 6 seats on the board. And most of those positions that I've just discussed were historic. There was not another woman nor an African American to ever hold those roles. And I was very honored to have them, and I enjoyed working for him.
How long did you work for him?
7 years, over 7 years, yes.
How did you get hooked up with him from this business perspective?
Well, over the years, he had been in the studio with former clients of mine and clients of mine, Boyz II Men, and someone whom I've been working for now for over 30 years, Kenny Babyface Edmonds.
Mm-hmm.
And Kenny and L.A. Reid, you know, have been in the studio with Michael over the years, and I got to be around him. But when I began working with Serena Williams, tennis champion Serena Williams, she and Venus were doing so well. I called her mother, Oracine, and I was introduced to them by former First Lady Cora Barry introduced me to the Williamses.
The First Lady of the District of Columbia.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I began working with Serena, where I represented her for about 5-6 years. And during that time, she was doing so well, I called up Oracine and I said, listen, what can I do to let them know that I appreciate them? Wonderful, strong, beautiful black women.
So how did you connect with Jackson?
Then I called out to Michael's office and I said, well, I represent Serena Williams and I would like to bring Venus and Serena and their family out to meet him. The next day I got a call saying, oh my God, he's a big fan. He'd love for you to do it. So we arranged it when they were out there for the WTA Tour Championships in like 2001. So it was a surprise. I won't get into all of that. I won't get into all of that.
Yeah,
but I do want to get to
how the two, how you connected initially.
And we get to Neverland. It was a big surprise for Venus and Serena. And during the course of our visit, Serena says to Michael, "Well, Mr. Jackson, do you have a publicist?" And he says, "Oh, yes, I have six." And she says, "Wait just a minute. You have six publicists with the bad press that you have? Mm-hmm. You need to hire her."
So Michael
took down my numbers. Next thing I knew, he was calling me with regards to the baby dangling in Germany.
Yeah, I remember that.
When there were several raids on his home, he called me. And he called me from jail when he was arrested. He called me from jail and said, "I just needed to talk to you. I cannot believe this has happened to me." And then the very next time he called was after the horrid interview that he conducted with a longtime friend of mine, Ed Bradley, who was the award-winning journalist on 60 Minutes.
Let me ask you about the documentary. Did you watch it last night?
I did.
What do you think about what you saw?
Well, I think it's a miscarriage of justice, actually, because Michael Jackson was acquitted in 2005. And for them to retry him all over again for sexual molestation, I think is a miscarriage of justice. I think he's been tried for years. This goes back all the way to the 90s. We were in Santa Maria for 6 months. And what bothers me about this, Harold, is that in 2004, Mr. Robeson voluntarily signed a declaration saying that Michael Jackson had never, ever acted inappropriate with him. After Michael's death, there was a Michael Jackson opus. I don't know whether you've seen it. A big red book, minimally cost $5,000. In that book, Mr. Robeson begged, I understand, to do a tribute to Michael, and he said, and let me read it to you, "Michael Jackson changed the world and more personally my life forever. He is the reason I dance, the reason I make music, and one of the main reasons I believe in the pure goodness of humankind."
Let me stop you because I don't have time in the program for the entire piece, and I'm really more interested in your thoughts because you have a really impressive resume. I mean, it is for a black woman, but I would say for anyone in this business, black or white, male or female. But how well did you know Michael Jackson personally?
Well, I knew him very well because in Santa Maria, where he was being tried for 6 months, I was there. He would pick up the phone and call me late at night, and he would talk for hours. As my role increased with him, the trust that he built in me increased. He moved here for 6 months, right here in Washington. And he moved here for me and my team of people, some of whom are still here, Bill Marshall, Adine King, Amel Jones, and others, and lawyers and accountants, that a team of people that I put together to help restore and reorganize his personal and business life. And he was here for 6 months. He was living out in Middleburg, Virginia. And I had unequal access to him, I think far more than anybody I've heard. And I've heard that I've worked with him longer than anybody has ever worked with him.
With that said, and during this time, like you said, you were with him for 7-8 years.
Mm-hmm.
From looking back, did you ever think that his association with these children, particularly having them sleep in his bedroom, sleep in his bed, did that ever give you pause?
Well, let me say this, and I hope you give me enough time to
Well, I will, but I do want to bring in in our other expert, but please.
Yeah. Well, let me say this to you. Mm-hmm. Child molestation and pedophilia is very serious.
Absolutely.
And several people have said that those of us who work for Michael Jackson, they did not call our names, but they said that we turned our heads. That's a lie. When Mr. Jackson asked me to begin working with him, I sat down and I talked to him about this. And I said, well, now, how am I to defend you in this? Now, I need you to be honest with me. And he was, but he also put Attorney Johnny Cochran on the line with me. And I had a two-hour conversation with them. And they told me from start to finish everything that had been going on, from Jordy Chandler to Gavin Avizio, where we were up in Santa Maria. And I'm going to tell you something. When I was around Michael Jackson, I never saw him doing anything inappropriate. And in fact, when Michael Jackson walked out of that court on June 13th, 2005, he says, you know what, Ramon, as Johnny Cochran and I told you, we were undermined by an attorney who went out and negotiated a $20 million settlement. I was not going to pay anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that ruined my life because I became a target. I do believe that from the bottom of my heart, because in the 7 years that I've worked for Michael Jackson, I never saw him doing anything inappropriate. There were no kids around him other than his own. And that's what I can say. And do I believe that he actually molested and abused these young men who spoke last night? No, I don't.
Okay. I need to go. I need to take a break right here. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about Leaving Neverland, the documentary about entertainment icon Michael Jackson. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Again, lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Dr. Shukat, and I wanted to make sure that we heard quite a bit from Ramon in reference to this. I'm sure you also saw the documentary. Your thoughts about not only the documentary, but more broadly dealing with some of those issues regarding adults and children.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I have not seen the documentary, but for the last 40 years, I've been talking to, treating, and supporting children who disclose sexual abuse. And the issue with children is that, unlike what one would think would be logical, that if something bad happens to them, they will tell somebody right away, that really doesn't happen. Months go by, years go by. Before children grow up, they become adolescents and feel safe enough to tell somebody about what happened. And there are many, many reasons for that, most of which is because kids are scared. And they're scared because, in my experience with kids, they've been threatened in some way, both verbally and nonverbally. And I'm not speaking about Michael Jackson. I'm talking in general based on all the children. I've seen over 10,000 kids.
Well, hold that point, Dr. Shukat, because I do need to take a very short break.
Sure.
And on the other side, I do want you to finish that point. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Renee calling from D.C., Patrick calling from Clinton, Maryland. We will be talking to you in just a moment. Lines will stay open. And, of course, as always, we will be taking your phone calls after 7:30. So please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, channel 141. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation will continue on Sirius XM, channel 141 in just 15 seconds. Stay with us.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about Leaving Neverland, the new explosive documentary about entertainment icon Michael Jackson and the broader issues that this documentary is raising. My guests are Ramon Bain, former manager for Michael Jackson, and Dr. Evelyn Shukat, child abuse pediatrician and medical director with the Treehouse Child Advocacy Center. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before the break, we were addressing a point with Dr. Shukat. Dr. Shukat, please finish your point.
Yes, children who've been abused physically or sexually by an adult, and they're usually known to the kids, whether they're family members or close friends of the family, are threatened that they tell the children, if you tell somebody, something bad is going to happen. Anything from I won't give you a PlayStation to I'm going to murder your mother. I've heard it all. But there's an overwhelming fear, which there are several points I'd like to bring out. The children are really are fearful of being ridiculed and teased and bullied if the history of abuse comes out. They're afraid that people really won't believe them, so why go through everything? They're afraid of the humiliation of the sex abuse, especially boys, when there's a homophobia, unfortunately, attached to sex abuse to them, still in these days. There are religious connotations as well, that if it's a religious family, their kids are told not to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Many times gifts are given, and the child knows that the monies that are given will help the family survive. So there's a lot of reasons. But the bottom line is, parents should never allow children to spend the night with a friend or even a relative if they don't know who's there, or they don't know who's going to supervise, or if they don't know the people well enough. Reputation is not the only thing you need to go by to protect your child.
Okay. 202-7810, 202-319-7810. Renee, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I'm a social worker as well, and I'm just totally agreeing with the woman that just spoke, and it's appalling that how we as a culture just ignore children, and we don't believe them when they say these things to us, because they are dealing with all of those different emotions. And it's just similar to, I hate to bring it up, to R. Kelly, how the young men talked about how he would keep them separate and not speak to other individuals or share information, because that is how you keep the secret. And we need to believe these children. They are now adults who have received therapy, and they're open to speaking their truth. And we need to hear that.
Okay.
And unfortunately, people, we love Michael Jackson. We all, who didn't grow up loving Michael Jackson? But anyone would not allow their child to sleep with a grown man in his bed and not expect anything.
Renee, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Ramon, what about that? I'm a parent. Now my daughter is 20. But I will say that, and I will admit to having a career in this business, and so I'm a little cynical, but I will say that I would not even allow my own daughter, you know, after the age of 2, to sleep in my bed. And that if she ever had an issue with thunder and lightning or monsters under the bed or in the closet, that what I did was I had her sleep in her room and I sat there until she fell asleep. And this goes back, I think, to what a lot of people are suggesting, is that whether you have children or not, whether you're a parent or not, that having a child, an a young minor child sleep in a grown man's bed or bedroom is at least unusual.
Well, let me just say this. Now, there you're talking about two different things. You're talking about whether or not a child should be allowed to sleep with an adult, and they are talking about child molestation.
But which one do you want me to address first, the child molestation
or the...
Not even the molestation, because certainly I don't think we will ever get an answer.
If I could say something, if I could interrupt, we're talking about boundaries.
Yes, that's what I was. That's exactly the word that I was referring to.
But we're
to.
Also talking about credibility, too.
Well, no,
we might be talking about boundaries, but we are talking about credibility. We are talking about men who voluntarily signed declarations, were not asked, so they perjured themselves then.
No.
Then in 2009, you're talking about somebody who begged to write in an opus, and then you're talking about someone who in 2011 sent a letter wanting to audition to be the main choreographer and dancer in Michael Jackson 1. And when he did not get that role, he came within the top five. When he did not get that role, then he sued for $1.38 billion. He lost. So that's what we're talking about.
No,
we're talking about credibility
versus what happened. That's not the point that I was making.
But that's the point I'm making, though.
Right, but
we're
talking about credibility of the people who are making the arguments
against Michael Jackson.
The issue that I'm asking you about, as the doctor suggested, was about boundaries. This is before the money, before the lawsuits. I'm just talking about an adult, man or woman, bringing into their bedroom and their bed a child that's not theirs.
Well, I think the parents have to be coming in here answering that question, because you know what? The child couldn't be in a bedroom of a man or woman if the mothers and the fathers would not sign off on it. And when I listened last night, I was appalled to hear some of the conversation that I heard regarding these parents allowing their children to sleep over and go around the world and do whatever they allowed them to do. I don't know many parents that would take their kids out of school to be traveling around with somebody for a year, and they're 8 and 9 years old.
And I think
so you
make
have
a
to
real,
go back
and you,
to
and you
the
make
parents
a good point about that.
That.
But hold on, I think you do make an excellent point about that, because I think that if indeed let us say for argument's sake that something untoward happened to these children. Yes, the parents, I would agree, bear some responsibility.
All responsibility.
My question is about the request to have a child in a grown person's bedroom.
Well, first of all, Michael Jackson isn't here to defend himself, so you don't know whether the kid asked to stay with him or he asked for the kid to stay with him. That's the murky part about all of this. We're discussing a man who died 10 years ago, and I think that if this documentary were going to be made, it should have been made during his life. Why wait 10 years after he died? He would have been able to answer the questions and sit here with you, because I would have allowed him to come in here and sit in with you to answer these questions. We never hid from anything. And so my position is this: if a child is going to be allowed to stay over and spend the night at Neverland or wherever else, Disneyland or whatever, the burden rests with the parent, because the parent has the absolute last say. And I'm telling you, it is just not these parents, but there are others out here that I have seen that will push their kids on entertainers, be it men or women. They will pull them out of school, as these parents did. One group of parents moved all the way from Australia.
Yes, that was pointed out in the let me say this. We are talking about, I think, the other side of this, and certainly, Dr. Shuket, I'd like your opinion on that. We are talking about Michael Jackson. We are talking about arguably the most famous individual in the world when he was alive, and one could argue one of the most famous entertainers or people in in recorded history. And so with that, you know, with that said, is it at all possible that parents or others may have been so enamored?
Well, like, you know,
if I may say
Dr. Shuchat, go ahead.
I agree with you. Part of my last life, my late husband was in show business, and I've seen that firsthand. And it's very seductive. But the glittering celebrity and all the fame, and you want to be near it. But that is a separate issue from being inappropriate with a young child. Two different stories. Yes, parents should have responsibilities, but parents don't willingly give their child over to somebody to be hurt. I don't think that's in their conscious efforts. I don't really want to talk about specifics, but I do want to say that young children who are exposed to child sexual abuse really don't understand what's going on. They don't define it as in adult terms of sexuality the way we understand it until they hit about fifth or sixth grade when they take health classes. And then the light bulb goes off and they say, oh, my God, what happened to me was X, Y, and Z. I was abused. But younger children, they know it wasn't right, but they don't know why it wasn't right. But that doesn't, because parents may give an inappropriate permission for a sleepover, doesn't allow somebody else to abuse them.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Patrick calling from Clinton. Thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind? Patrick, are you there? Yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah, I just to me, it's just not doesn't make sense to me that they would wait till he had died years after his death to make a movie and accusing the same people that helped him get acquitted from the charges. And also, I lived in California, in throughout the 70s. And I also know that they used to perform at the Reagan, Ronald and Nancy Reagan ranch when Reagan was the governor of California. And I've been there a couple of times with concerts they had up there with his cousins. He had two cousins. They were like my best friend.
So Patrick, what's the point that you're trying to make, please?
Point that I'm making is just because he like didn't have a childhood or whatever.
Patrick, I'm going to have to let you go. If you figure out specifically what you'd like to share with us, we're certainly willing to take your phone call. One of the things, and this is bigger than Michael Jackson, I would argue, aside from the fact that, you know, he is no longer living. But, you know, one of the things, Ramon, that you mentioned was that, of course, Michael Jackson was acquitted. R. Kelly was acquitted, and now you have people coming forward and saying that he has done these things. Do you think there's any parallel in these issues? And what do you believe is at work when we're talking about these kinds of issues related to entertainers accused of sex abuse?
Well, first of all, there's a difference between Michael Jackson and R. Kelly. Michael Jackson has been dead 10 years.
Well,
R. Kelly
I
is still
that.
Here.
Right, I said
Number
that.
Number two, but, I think mm-hmm. that if there is going to be a documentary, there should have been both sides. When you're on the right side of right, right always wins. So not to have any of Mr. Jackson's attorneys on that documentary or a family, but to just have a one-sided, very biased documentary, to me, was unconscionable. The director, Dan Reed, was asked, why did you not have anyone from Mr. Jackson's side? He said, well, this is not about Michael Jackson. It's about Wayne Robeson and James Safechuck. Pardon me? We would not even know Wayne Robeson, James Safechuck, or Dan Reed if it were not for Michael Jackson. I lived 21 raids to Michael Jackson's house. I lived through FBI investigation after FBI investigation. I lived through the seizing of Michael Jackson's personal belongings. I lived through 6 months of trial. And I am sorry, but if you are concerned about how you were treated, then I don't see you trying to audition to be the lead choreographer of Michael Jackson 1. And when you don't get it, you file a $1.38 billion lawsuit. I am sorry, but these two don't pass the smell test to me.
Dr. Shukat, what do you think? I mean, what about her point of?
Well, it's an interesting point, but there's also the mental health point that sometimes children identify with their abusers and they grow up. And I'm a pediatrician. I'm not a therapist, but I can tell you, in order to lessen the pain and feeling of shame and guilt, many times victims of child sexual abuse align with their perpetrators. I'm not saying that this is the case, but that's certainly not unusual. I've seen children all the time tell me in my office how much they love their uncle, their grandfather, their stepfather, or their mother or their grandmother, whoever the abuser was, and then come back a week later and come in and cry and said, well, I didn't mean it, I'm afraid. Adults do identify sometimes for a host of different reasons. I don't know these two gentlemen at all. I don't know what they've been through. They've been put into the limelight when they were children, and their families, the family was involved with Mr. Jackson. There's a lot of other stuff, and yes, FBI investigations and court processes are very invasive and very trying. But this is not about that. It's about the victims of child sexual abuse, if they were victims. Kids and adults disclose abuse. I call it like peeling an onion, a layer at a time. With proper therapy, more comes out, the more courageous people become, in order to feel confident enough to talk about what happened to them. And sometimes they never do. You know, the statistics are, and I hate to use statistics, but it's true, 1 in 4 women, by the time they're 18, have experienced some sort of sexual abuse. And the statistics for men are really unknown for sure. People say it's 1 out of 6, because men underreport. Men and boys underreport their experience of child sexual abuse.
Dr. Shukat, let me ask you about, as I mentioned to Ramon earlier, outside of the Michael Jackson issue, outside of the R. Kelly issue,
right?
How should parents watch carefully when you're talking about people of status, people who are in the eyes of a family, of a child, of a parent, iconic, and that person comes into your life, what do parents need to be aware of so that, as Ramon said, if this happened, that the parents do bear responsibility?
Parents need to educate their children from a very young age, whether they are in show business or in the science field, whomever they are, that nobody's allowed to touch them in private places. And those are the places on your body that's covered by a bathing suit. It's very simple, plain and simple. A four-year-old understands that. And a child needs to be told that if anybody ever makes you feel uncomfortable, no matter who it is, you can trust your parent, and they won't get mad at you. We'll be there to protect and support you. That needs to be a consistent message from an early age. And what if you start doing that, children will understand that their parents are their friends and their backers, and they'll feel open and free enough to disclose. It always doesn't happen like that, so parents need to be aware of signs of a change in behavior. If a younger child all of a sudden doesn't want to go to school or to a certain place for play dates, or adolescents start becoming truant in schools or having aberrant behavior with drugs or alcohol or a new set of friends that parents don't feel are great, and watch their social media. Everyone has to be vigilant. It's a process. It's not a one-time conversation. In order to keep everybody open and trusting each other in the home, so you can preclude any abusive situation to the best of your abilities.
Ramon, when the raids and the trials and all of this was going on, how did you advise Michael Jackson?
Well, my advice was minimal because this was a legal issue. So he had Mr.s Garagus, Mesereau, Oxman, Brossman, you, Johnny Cochran, Steve Cochran, Susan Yu, and Brian Oxman. So my role during that time was just as publicist. I was not the general manager or president of the company. I was the publicist, and of course.
But you said he called you.
He did.
From jail.
He did.
And so there is the legal court, and there is the court of public opinion. And your resume did not begin or end with Michael Jackson.
That's correct.
You are very, very familiar with Mayor for Life, Marion Barry.
That's correct.
And he also had his public relations battles. And as a native Washingtonian, I'm well aware of that. And so I ask again, was there ever a time, whether it was calling him from jail or thereafter, that he asked for your advice, and if so, did you give him
any? Well, the only thing that I could tell anybody is to tell the truth, mm-hmm. because when you're on the right side of right, right will always manifest itself. And with any client that I have, you sit down and you strategize when you tell the truth and how you tell the truth, always tell the truth.
For that, and that's such a... That is such a really important point. Not only that you tell the truth, but how you tell the truth. For those who are uninitiated, what does that mean from a publicist's point of view?
Well, it's so many different circumstances, so it's hard to say. It just depends on the circumstance, who you're addressing, who you're talking to. And you've got to be very honest, and you've got to show a sincerity about you. And you've got to let whomever you're speaking to feel your sincerity. There are people who are out here who are telling the truth, but they come across so insincere and so cocky and so arrogant until you're like, yeah, right, I don't even want to hear anything else you have to say. And you turn the channel. And you know, they lose because of the way they handle themselves. And when you are addressing issues with potential clients or clients, you have to look at what the particular circumstance is, and you have to tell that person that they have a responsibility to be as pure and as honest and as sincere as they can be based on the audience that they are speaking to. You can't be talking to people who are not on a certain educational level, for instance, a certain way. You can't get in there and try to be cocky and use words that they've never heard of to get your point across. So, but then on the other hand, it's the same when you're in a room with people who are cocky. You know, and you're trying to get over your message of your sincerity and the truth. You've got to show you. You've got to show who you are.
Go ahead, Dr. Shukat.
With children, your point's well taken. That's why when children are spoken to, when there are allegations of child abuse, there are specifically trained forensic interviewers who know how to speak to children, who are specifically trained in asking open-ended questions with law enforcement watching through two-way mirrors. So everything is done legally and correctly so the truth can be obtained from children.
I will admit, the of all of the, you know, obviously disturbing things that were alleged in the documentary, the one of the, again, this was as a parent, this is one of the things that struck me, is that I believe the mother of one of the men said that Michael Jackson and her son spoke on the phone for, you know, for 6 hours. And I think this goes to the point that you were making earlier, Ramon, about what role parents play. I will say I don't see any reason why a 7 or 8 year old boy would be on the phone for 6 hours, even with grandma.
That's exactly right.
And assuming, just for the sake of argument, that something like that, you know, actually happened, that, and this goes back to what Dr. Shukat said, was that parents do need to take an extremely active role in the health and welfare of their children. But with that said, the other thing was the fax machines, because during the time that was mentioned in the documentary part one, there were no smartphones and there weren't even any, I don't think any flip phones back then. But the fax machines, in communicating, you know, with, you know, with the children, and you've seen his handwriting. What do you believe is the case with those fax machines? Do you believe that there is any iota of truth in anything that was presented last night?
Well, I'm going to be honest. I had some concerns about some of the voices on the phone. It did not sound like Michael Jackson to
but
me.
But let me, I'm asking you about about the
I'm
faxes.
Looking, and the faxes came through so quickly, I was not able to do a hand analysis as to whether or not it was Michael Jackson's signature, because it came
and I'm not asking about a hand analysis, but I'm asking about someone that you said you knew well.
Yeah, but you asked me, did he write the letters? And I'm telling you, I don't know, because I didn't get a chance to look at the handwriting very closely.
Did you ever know him to, you know, personally use fax machines?
No,
to,
I did not.
So I go back to the question.
Not in 7 years have I ever seen Michael Jackson send a fax to anybody. So
is there anything at all that was mentioned last night, other than the obvious, you know, mentions of, you know, Neverland and the places that he was performing and the other things, that you say is truthful? I know you don't believe the entire thing is truthful, obviously. But was there anything that you heard last night that made you think back and go, hmm?
Well, I know Michael Jackson was a big kid. And, you know, that's just not for me to discuss, because, you know, you have to go all the way back. And that's like a developmental issue. Who feels more comfortable around adults versus children? But I do not think that Michael Jackson molested any children. Mm-hmm. I think that Michael Jackson felt more comfortable around children. But I'm telling you, he said to me, Bill Marshall is sitting right in the other room. When he walked out of that, Aideen King is probably listening. When he walked out of that courtroom on June 13th, 2005, he said to me and all of us, I will never, ever be around another child again that's not mine. Mm-hmm. And I can say, as long as I was around him, he was not. Mm. I think that he learned the lesson the hard way.
Mm-hmm.
He had an innocence about him. Mm-hmm. And he looked at the world through different colored eyes.
I think that's a good place to start. And maybe...
Well, I have one last thing to say.
I've got 30 seconds, actually less,
quickly. I
got quickly.
It. Regardless of Mr. Jackson's involvement or lack of involvement, this should be a springboard for a topic of conversation between parents and kids.
Okay.
And if parents find
and
out...
And I agree.
Okay.
And if parents find out something has happened to their children,
yeah.
they should call Child Protective Services immediately in the county that they're in.
Dr. Shuchat, I'm completely out of time, but I want to thank you very much
You're
for sharing
welcome.
Your thoughts
it's
with
pleasure,
us. And Ramon Bain, thank you so much for coming in and talking about this extremely difficult topic. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Monday, March 4th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.